Okay, welcome back, everybody. I am on.
Excellent.
At 16:40, we'll now resume. I would now like to ask first the applicant to present the approach that's been taken to the issue of written statements of in schemes of investigation. Let's start with the offshore and then move on to the onshore. We'll then ask the IPs if there's any observations. Dover, presumably still here. Good. So could you just talk us through the progress on developing the WSIs?
Thank you, sir. Jennifer Holgate on behalf of the applicant. I'll start with the with the offshore elements, if you like, sir.
Thank you.
It's probably best then I'll pass over to Mr. McNeil, who will give an update on the offshore elements of the WSI.
Yes, Ewan McNeil for the applicant. The offshore WSI was produced as a draft document that has been passed through to Historic England for comment. And comment has been received in respect of that, and also some relevant comments in relation to ongoing discussion about the Statement of Common Ground. And a further draft of that has been produced, which incorporates, as far as we are aware, the relevant actions that came out of that comment. So the WSI, draft WSI as it stands, as an overarching document is well advanced for the offshore and has been through a couple of review cycles with the consultees.
Is it correct to understand that the intention is to submit that revised draft at deadline 3?
Yes, sir, that's correct.
That's the plan.
And indeed, in our responses to the written representations, which I can provide the reference to that document if you'd like it, sir. Which is
Rep 203.
Yep. Thank you, sir. In their various comments to Historic England, when they raise offshore, we have specifically stated where we've taken into account those comments and updated it. Those updates have happened, and so we will produce a draft in its current form for deadline 3 for the offshore. Yes.
Any further comments to make on the onshore element?
Jennifer Holgate on behalf of the applicant. Yes, sir. There is an onshore written scheme of investigation. That is currently in draft form and has been circulated to KCC for comment. That is currently in the process of being circulated as well, I understand, to Historic England, and is in the process of essentially being updated to take certain comments into account further to written representations, and that too will be submitted for deadline 3.
Okay. Briefly, can I just ask the member of the applicant's team responsible for projection if we could just return to the agendas? Thank you very much.
Thank you. I think it's a little unfair perhaps on Historic England in that it's not your remit, but I wonder if you have a brief from your onshore colleagues as to whether they are feeling that they are content with the pace of development of both of those WSIs. Firstly, in fact, I could ask you to comment on the offshore WSI, and then if there's anything that you can add in terms of the onshore that would be appreciated, just to understand whether there's a broad level of satisfaction with the progress at deadline 2.
Yeah, Historic England. Offshore, we were consulted quite early about the kind of approach to be taken by the written scheme of investigation. Through a telephone conference and through a face-to-face meeting with the applicant. At that point, we voiced some concerns we had, general concerns we had, given the export cable route and its relative close proximity to the Goodwin Sands, which is a known maritime hazard over the centuries. And the applicant was considered those sufficiently, we feel, and over the course, through our written representation also, we raised, we repeated those concerns, and as far as we understand it, an updated WSI has been provided. We're still reviewing that WSI to see how it addresses that particular point and others that we've also raised. But on the whole, we felt generally that the standard of the WSI was for offshore was good, and it teased out some of the particular nuances of the project. We also had some concerns about the cable trenching depths along the export cable and how that related to certain limitations of the geophysical equipment that had been used and was being proposed in terms of the design parameters. And again, they, as far as we've, we're aware, they've taken those comments on board and are considering them. But I think we have noted a specific point in terms of the remit of the WSI, and I think this comes back to the specific approach and the proposals being made. In terms of the landfall, because we understand an HDD cable is not being proposed, a trench is required, that the offshore WSI will cover up to mean high water spring. We do note actually that in terms of a DCO, there will be a requirement for that element to be picked up. More specifically, I think they, in any reference to the offshore WSI, is only considered to mean low water. In terms of a remit, that might be down to a consistent approach with other offshore wind farms where an HDD cable has been used. And we agreed with the applicants at that time that that was only more that was necessary. But we feel that, and we understand that the onshore WSI will cover the remit to mean low water, providing an overlap in terms of methodological approaches, such that depending on the receptors that may be encountered, that you may be able to implement either WSI depending on what approaches are included within that WSI. Such that for onshore there might be approaches more used through onshore terrestrial archaeological excavation or field walking methods, whereas offshore there may be the requirement or possibility of utilising geophysical techniques. So to that extent, we're in terms of the intertidal elements, I think we're relatively content. Again, we'll have to go back and have a good look through that, but I think we can provide additional comments for deadline three. In terms of onshore, we and again, as you pointed out, so that we don't have the remit for undesignated sites, but we do have a general interest in the historic environment, and we did raised some concern about Second World War defences, military defences in the Pegwell Bay area, and how they could be mitigated. So that's something that we would like to see reflected in an onshore WSI, and also the potential for significant historic discoveries, archaeological discoveries that could be made. Whether it's a good time for me to raise this point or not, it was in reflection of the code of construction practice. I don't know if it's a good time for me to discuss this.
Before you do, could you hold that for just a little moment? I think it's worth just offering the applicant an opportunity to respond on that particular point about the trenching versus DDI, HDD. What I think there might have been a misunderstanding from our colleague in Historic England as to what the state of play is on those landfall options, which is an opportunity for you just to respond. I would also like you to clarify this issue of the intertidal zone. And as far as I've understood it so far, Historic England's interest is to mean low water, and Kent County Council's interest is to mean high water springs. What happens in that intertidal zone, and how do we address the responsibility for the, in particular, historic environment aspects that come up in that intertidal zone?
Yes, Historic England, sorry if I've confused things. In terms of our remit, it's Historic England the advisory role that we play as a primary advisor for the MMO. In terms of licensing and planning, we respond and consider the historic environment up to mean high water.
You do, up to mean high water.
And as far as I'm aware, the local authorities will always take responsibility for Arklos Group deposits and remains down to mean low water. So there's always, as far as I'm aware, an overlap in that respect.
Thank you. To the applicant then.
So in relation to your first point, in relation to the HDD and the trenching at the landfall, I believe the point you're making is in relation to the dropping of option two, if that is correct, or have I misunderstood?
No, I should clarify. The statement that, as I heard it, was thinking that the position now was trenching through the intertidal, and that is one of the options that remains, as I understand it.
Yes, I mean, Sean Leake for the applicant. I mean, certainly trenching is one of the options within the intertidal. The other option obviously being HDD in the upper intertidal in order to potentially mitigate effects on salt marsh habitats. Does that help solve your question, Stuart?
I have to say I was under the impression that HDD had been opted out, but I'll have to review that again, sorry.
Good, thank you. Let me pass back to the point that you were holding on. Would you like to carry on?
Yeah, in terms of code of construction practice.
Indeed.
It can be found in category 8 of other documents and reports within the environmental statement package. We noted recently, and it wasn't something that we picked up at the written representation stage, was that objectives for the historic environment to minimise impact and direct reference to either an onshore WSI or offshore WSI wasn't included within the COCP. And as far as we're aware, this should be something that this document should include in terms of consistency with other NSIP projects of this nature.
Thank you. I'll ask the applicant to respond.
Just going back to that direct point before dealing with the intertidal points, there are specific both requirements and conditions that deal with both an onshore WSI in the requirements of Schedule 1 of the Development Consent Order. There is then the requirement for an offshore WSI as well contained within the schedule. So in that sense, they are properly protected by having their own requirements and conditions and have to be complied with in accordance with that. So I'd probably say, in a sense, being standalone is helpful from Historic England's perspective, in my view, sir.
Thank you. Any further response on that?
No, I agree. I think that's
good.
A good point to make.
Please.
Thank you, sir. Jennifer Holgate, on behalf of the applicant. In relation to the intertidal point, it's a point well raised. We agree that the two WSIs need to talk to each other and ensure that where there is that overlap between me high water and low water, that they allow for that within both of the documents. That is something that does already exist to a degree in the offshore WSI, but we are going to include some further wording just to make that point explicitly clear and to ensure that there is that level of cooperation, which would normally happen in fairness for these projects of this type, but we are cognizant of the point that's raised, and we are looking at that in relation to the deadline three versions that we're submitting.
Thank you. I've got one point of clarification to ask in regard to a comment referred to in the deadline two submissions, which refers to 500 metre turning circles. This, if I can give you some degree of guidance on this, para 4.13 in the representation, which says the assessment of geophysical survey data did not cover the 500 metre turning circles. However, it is unclear what specific areas this relates to. Now, I wonder if you can cast any light on this.
Sean Leake for the applicant, if I cover initially and then pass over to my colleague Ewan McNeil. I understand that this is, as the vessels undertake the geophysical survey across the array boundary, for example, they will extend beyond the array, turn around, and then pass back in, and it's just whether or not that data or those data have been analysed.
Okay, thank you.
If helpful, I can pass over to Ewan that can shed a little bit more light on that.
Yes, Ewan McNeil for the applicant. That's correct. It's making sure that all the appropriate data is assessed so that at the moment we've got indicative layouts, as we talked about for other elements earlier, but it's, some of those are quite close to the boundary edge, so it's making sure that there is sufficient coverage and that coverage has been assessed to fully encompass the development.
Thank you very much. Thank you for raising all of the points which are still being reviewed, and we'll await deadline three, I think, for any further questioning on this. But I do want to just turn back to the interface between the first part of this hearing and this. I think there's just one particular aspect which we should be willing to scrutinise just a little bit further, and that is the consideration that I think has come out in the last month of further conversations about potential harm to Margate Conservation Area, and I understand from your earlier comment that the discussion that took place between your colleagues in Historic England and the applicant's team have come to the conclusion of low-level harm. I wonder whether there was any conversation at the same point of the potential impact on the setting of Reculver Fort, which is another of the viewpoints, of course, in the SLVIA. Firstly, is there anything in your brief from your colleagues at Historic England to help us on this point?
Historic England, unfortunately, no, not for today. But that's not to mean that I can't go back and confer with them as to what their position is on that particular heritage asset.
I think we should take that as a welcome action. But firstly, let me ask the applicant if that conversation has actually taken place in regard to Reculva, and if not, whether there's a particular point that you'd like to raise.
So Jennifer Hall, getting behalf of the applicant, I'll just confer with my colleagues for one moment.
Thank you.
Ed Simons for the applicant. I can check, but from what I believe, it has been discussed, but wasn't regarded as significant. But I will check.
Thank you. We'll hold on that, I think, until we've heard further feedback at the next stage. But I do think that we can put this into the context of the earlier discussion, which is we've been looking at the work that has been done in regard to the Kentish Flats extension. And I think it might be worth, at the same time, wrapping in any seascape effects at Reculva that were discovered during that examination. And in particular, I think it'd be worth putting into the same action I think it would be very useful not only to look at the montage work that was done for the Kentish Flats extension, but also possibly to introduce some as-built study. Could we ask you to take that on board as an action for deadline 3?
So we can certainly, Jennifer Hall, on behalf of the applicant, we can certainly go away and look at that. But just to be clear, the relationship there between the heritage side and the visual side, it might be helpful if you could just give us a bit more context as to how you would want that to be. I'm just conscious, so I wouldn't want there to be, I guess, a conflation of the two unnecessarily, but I just want to understand where you're coming from.
I think what we're looking for here is the crossover point, really, is the seascape effect, and there is also an effect on the setting of a monument site. And I think it's effectively the same piece of work, but with interpretation and a commentary from the applicant's team, which covers both of those aspects.
Jennifer Hall, getting behalf of the applicant. Thank you, sir. So in that sense, you're asking for simply the cultural heritage assessment side of it to be incorporated as part of the overall note, in essence.
Absolutely. Now, I think it's probably very close to the end of this section. I am going to just ask if there are any other points from my colleagues to cover at this point.
I guess there was just one other very brief observation that I was going to make that, again, is a fine point and not one that I wish to labour, but in the same vein, and given that we have Historic England here and potentially a little bit of work being done for deadline 3, I was equally just wondering if we've reached a final and concluded position from them on any question about the setting of Richborough Roman Fort and Amphitheatre as a site. I'm conscious, I mean, that's the site that we've actually inspected ourselves on an unaccompanied site inspection, and then subsequently we carried out an accompanied site inspection into Richborough Energy Park, as part of which we did make a conscious effort to view back towards the site, and there are not, in our observation, significant issues of concern arising. But you are here, and I didn't want it to kind of disappear and just be forgot.
Historic England, again, I'd have to confer with my colleagues. I would say, though, that they did carry out a site visit on the 5th of December with representatives of the applicant and their heritage experts. which I believe was minuted, or at least a note was captured. My understanding also is that that note would be attached or appended to a statement of common ground.
Okay, fine. I've just overlooked it.
But no, it might be in the in future, but I think that whether that also covers Rakulva, Richborough, and also Margate, I will double check from my perspective.
Well, apologies if you end up pointing up something that we should already have read, but I certainly hadn't cited it and didn't want to allow this to go past without raising it, just in case. Anything else, Mr. Redford?
Well, I think the point that comes out of that is that it's getting to the stage where it would be extremely helpful where we're now moving into the next stage of the Statement of Common Ground to wrap a number of these dialogues into that. Mm. I think we've actually completed the discussion of the topics on the agenda.
Okay.
But I suspect it might be just worth asking the applicant if there's anything else that you wish to raise before we start to close the hearing.
Sir Jennifer Holgate, I will just check briefly with my colleagues. No, we're fine, thank you, sir.
And indeed, just finally the same check with the interested parties, so Dover District Council. And Historic England.
No, nothing to add, thanks.
Okay. Well, we can now then move on to agenda item 4, which is the review of issues and actions arising. Now, Ms. Powis has been keeping the rolling list on this occasion, so I'll just hand over to her.
Okay. So what I've got five main actions noted here. I'll run through them in chronological order. The first was an action on Historic England for deadline 3. To provide confirmation in writing of the tentative position put orally today that the seascape effects of the proposal on historically important views to the White Cliffs of Dover from the sea would not be harmful. Then a second action point I had is on the applicant, again for deadline 3, to submit a position statement to consider the effect of the proposal on views toward the White Cliffs from the sea, most notably from ferry routes inward to the UK. Consider the work that's already been done and conclude whether any further analysis is required. Third action I've got is in relation to the Kentish Flats Extension project and on the applicant again to provide those materials that we can't access anymore because they've been archived, so the SL, VIA and works plans from the consented project. And also, I think I've added on to that then, that if possible and where possible, as built images to show where there's any kind of parallels with the project before us. Number 4 then is...
If I can just embroider that one briefly as a reminder that we specifically didn't put Historic England under an obligation to contribute to that process, because what we'll do is we'll look at it. And if it then seems valuable to make a formal written question to Historic England, asking for a consideration of, I guess, the enveloping or donut dimension of the project, then we may do that, but we don't want to do it until we've seen this.
Indeed, so Jennifer Holgate, it was just to mention as well, I think we did offer to look at projects in the round as well for you, not just Kentish Flats.
Yeah, okay, yeah. I have actually got any other relevant consented projects. Mm. Fourthly then, it was just a commitment from the applicant about this clarifying the approach about interrelationships between the onshore and offshore WSIs. It sounds like a piece of work you already had in hand, but I just wanted to note that's something that you had committed to. And then finally, looking at the SLVIA effects at Rakulva Port.
Fort.
Rakulva Fort and Richborough Roman Fort and Amphitheatre, although it sounds like the latter is actually dealt with, so maybe just be a signposting document.
Yep.
So that's an action on both Historic England and on the applicant for deadline 3 to consider the extent to which those effects have been considered. If there's anything else that you've noted, do shout at this point.
Okay. In which case, we can then move on. Next steps essentially are in relation to the subject matters of this hearing, the delivery of the points raised in the action list. I don't believe there's anything else that we need to cover. And so unless there's anything else that anybody wants to put to us before we close this hearing, I will thank everybody very much for their valued contributions to this process and draw this hearing to a close, only observing that obviously in the absence of Kent County Council and Thanet District Council, there will still be some material that flows through to second written questions. And then finally, ladies and gentlemen, I'm afraid for some of us, the effort is not over, because a brief reminder that we need to be back in this room for the room will be open from 6. Well, I'm sure it'll remain open, but staff will be here from 6, and we will be here at 6:30 for the open floor hearing this evening. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much.
Thank you.